Chapter 23 is the concept of mental illness, a useful way of conceptualizing mental disorders and emotional problems. Note the next chapter 24 contains a discussion that involves some of the ideas that will be discussed in this chapter 23. However, the discussion in chapter 24 is based on Thomas S. Shash's book The Myth of Mental Illness, Revised Edition, 1974. Thomas S. Shash is a psychiatrist who strongly believes that most mental disorders are of psychogenic origin. End of note. The concept of mental illness, is it useful or deceiving? Important note: I am classifying any disorder that has a physiological cause as a disease or illness. If the disorder does not have a physiological cause, then I do not consider it a disease or illness in this paper. Thus, for a disorder to be considered a disease, it must have detectable biochemical and/or physiostructural factors that are abnormal. Of course, there are other possible classifications besides the one I am using. Generally, the concept, or phrasing mental illness, is deceiving to the patient and our society in general. Most conditions that are classified as mental illnesses are not illnesses at all, with some exceptions, of course. They are psychological disorders that have no physiological cause. This can also be stated as most mental disorders of the type treated by psychologists and psychiatrists are generally psychogenic in nature, and very few are of somatogenic origin. A true illness essentially has either a biochemical and/or physiostructural cause, which is generally detectable by chemical evaluation of body fluids or visible with X-rays, CAT scan, MRI, etc. I excluded the PET scan, which is explained in a note on the end of this paragraph. It is true that all psychological states have some physiological effect on the body. For example, if a person is relaxed, there are specific biochemical factors involved. If the relaxed person is suddenly frightened by a mad dog, her biochemistry and nervous reactions will change. But it is not correct to call this an illness, because the cause of the reaction is stimuli, a mad dog. An example using a mental disorder is as follows. When people are exposed to certain types of prolonged psychological stresses, which could include their own negative thinking processes, there may be long-term biochemical changes that serve to maintain a state of depression. Question: is this an illness? If the cause was psychological stresses, then I would not define it as an illness. Note: a PET scan image cannot generally be used to prove that a condition is physiologically caused. The reason for this is the image obtained with a PET scan is determined essentially by psychological factors. This device forms an image that relates to the way the brain is being used at a given instant in time, which is related to the blood flow in relation to the fuel consumption of the brain. For example, if you made a person very anxious and they were also concentrating on both verbal and visual stimuli, there would be much red in the image. If, on the other hand, there is a normal amount of stimulation and the person is moderately relaxed, there would be much yellow with very little red in the image. If the person was totally relaxed and depressed with the eyes closed, there would be much blue and probably no red in the image. The primary point here is that these images can be made to change from moment to moment by changing the mood and sensory input of the subject. Simply stated, the PET scan indicates momentary psychological states in terms of images. In spite of this reality, the images from these machines are often, inadvertently or intentionally, used in deceiving ways. That is, the images are sometimes used to make a case that certain mental disorders are somatogenic in nature. There are a number of PET scans in Gleitman Psychology 4th edition that makes this false impression. Drug companies sometimes use PET scan images in some of their ads to falsely suggest that certain disorders are physiologically caused, which justifies the use of their product. The PET scan is obviously not capable of providing such evidence. The evidence it does supply generally relates to psychology only, specifically psychophysiology. It is true that there are certain exceptions to the above where the PET scan can be used to help diagnose a physiological condition, such as if one wants to find if a specific area of the brain is functioning normally when certain stimulus is presented to the subject. One example is showing a complex visual image, which should cause a red spot to appear in the image over the occipital cortex, if it is functioning normally. But such a use of the PET scan cannot be a logical justification for interpreting images of mental states produced by psychological disorders as a physiological disease. Essentially, by itself, the PET scan cannot prove whether a condition is psychogenic or somatogenic in origin. End of note. Some psychiatrists and some of the literature would disagree with the view presented in the above paragraphs, because classifying a psychological disorder, such as depression, as a disease justifies the use of drugs. Classifying a psychological abnormality as a disease also has a financial motive in relation to medical insurance and disability benefits. However, There is some legitimate justification for all of the above in some cases, because some psychological disorders can be just as disabling as a major disease. Drugs might be the only feasible way of treating certain psychological disorders, especially if the patient is not motivated in the direction needed for improvement of his condition. Since many psychological disorders are as devastating as a disease, requiring medical treatment, insurance payments and disability benefits might be justified. This is probably especially true with alcohol and illicit drug abuse, which require much medical services because of secondary physiological damage caused by the habit. But, what is a psychological disorder anyway? A psychological disorder, as I would define the term, is a condition that develops as a result of one or more of the following six categorical components. 1. Maladaptive learning. This involves many types of learning that have adverse psychological effects. Most maladaptive learning takes place in early childhood through late adolescence, but it certainly is not limited to this age group. This dysfunctional type of learning includes the attainment of two or more sets of conflicting values, the evolvement of irrational fears or specific phobias, the development of bad habits including drug and alcohol abuse. Perhaps one of the most important maladaptive learning is the learning of dysfunctional strategies to deal with the problems and experiences of life. This can range from a habit of repressing unpleasant thoughts, to dysfunctional communication strategies, and dysfunctional manipulative techniques of dealing with people. Under this category is the learning of any type of antisocial behavior. And there are many other factors that can be added. Note it is worth noting, in general, that the learning process can be divided into two categories: emotional learning, which includes classical conditioning, and intellectual learning. For example, developing a phobia or a habit of unconsciously repressing anxiety-provoking thoughts are the result of emotional learning. Developing skills that are consciously carried out, such as reading, writing, maladaptive manipulative techniques of dealing with people, are examples of intellectual learning. One's philosophy and beliefs, whether they are adaptive or maladaptive, are also the result of intellectual learning. The distinction between emotionally learned material and intellectually learned material are quite important, because if the material is maladaptive, the methods needed to remedy the resulting problems will be quite different. For example, a phobia, which is emotionally learned, generally cannot be extinguished with a series of intellectual discussions. To solve such a problem requires special methods, such as progressive desensitizing techniques. However, a maladaptive behavior pattern of consciously manipulating people might be solved with a series of intellectual discussions. This would especially be the case if more effective strategies were explained to the client. End of note. 2. A failure to learn components needed for psychological adjustment. This can include a failure to learn fundamental behavior patterns that are needed for adjustment in society. Another component under this category is failure to learn and actualize basic moral values, such as a failure to develop a basic understanding of people and society. Failure to learn certain intellectual skills such as reading, writing, and the skills needed to obtain employment. Of course, there are many other learning failures that can be added here. 3. Adverse environments. This includes problems with individuals in the social network. A primary example are parents, who are one or more of the following: violent, ignorant, alcohol or drug abusers. Under this category are poor neighborhoods, violent, drug or alcohol abusing neighbors, gangs, and high crime rates. Unsupervised environments for children and teenagers are still another factor that comes under this category. Another primary factor are schools that are not set up to educate the category of students that attend. There are many other adverse situations that belong under this category. 4. Adverse life experiences. This is a common situation in modern society. Some examples of adverse life experiences are economic problems, losing a job, failure in school, divorce, death of parents or other close relatives, destruction of property from a natural disaster, etc. Very often, but certainly not always, people who develop psychological disorders from adverse life experiences have had some of the difficulties mentioned in Category 1 and/or 2 during their developmental years. For example, individuals that are severely psychologically harmed by adverse life experiences may have learned very ineffective coping strategies. Of course, this is not always the case. Adverse life experiences can be so severe in some cases that they can cause a psychological disorder in a person that was very well adjusted all her life. Adverse life experiences very often start a chain reaction, which is discussed in the next category. 5. Chain reactions. A chain reaction is a situation where one or more problems causes additional problems. The new problems may be worse than the original difficulties, and the new problems might cause still more problems. The situation is probably involved in the development of many psychological disorders. An example of a chain reaction is a person might lose his job, which causes financial problems and emotional stress with his wife. This can lead to divorce in some cases, which may result in clinical depression. Clinical depression can lead to other problems such as alcohol or drug abuse. 6. The development of vicious cycles. This is the most complicated component and it required 10 paragraphs to explain. Once any psychological difficulties develop, there is a high probability that one or more vicious cycles may develop. The consequences of the vicious cycle can be much greater than the original psychological problems. In some cases, the original problems were relatively minor, but it triggered a vicious cycle that resulted in the development of a serious psychological disorder over time. The consequences of the cycle involve an increase in severity, such as a depressed person becoming more depressed. Vicious cycles often have chain reactions incorporated into the cycle, which results in an expansion of the psychological pathology into other areas. An example is an individual who loses a good-paying job and develops financial problems as a result, then becomes depressed. And the depression leads to alcohol abuse, which prevents the person from finding another job, which causes further financial problems and a serious case of suicidal depression, etc. The dynamics and several types of vicious cycles are explained in the following paragraphs. The psychological disorder and/or the psychiatric diagnostic label can have an adverse effect on the social network of a patient, which may result in harsh treatment, scapegoating, social rejection, the loss of opportunities associated with the socializing process, etc. This can greatly worsen the psychological condition, which will worsen the response of the social network. In extreme cases, it can force the patient to live in a state of almost total withdrawal from society, which might further worsen her psychological condition. This will probably also worsen the response of the people in the social network, creating even more problems for the patient. There is another type of vicious cycle that also relates to the social network. The people in the social network may inadvertently force the patient into a role of a mental patient by the way they treat her. They might consider her a phony or a mental patient that is not in touch with reality, if she behaves in a normal way or expects to be treated normally. Her therapists might think she is trying to hide her psychiatric difficulties from them. In some cases, they may reward her if she behaves as they expect her to, that is, as a mental patient. The rewards can range from encouragement, indicating that progress is being made, because the patient is aware that she is mentally sick, to financial rewards, from family or from agencies that supply disability benefits. The rewards may be quite functional in some cases, but they are often coupled with inadvertent sanctions if the patient makes an attempt at improving her condition, which of course is quite dysfunctional. Thus, the patient is rewarded for being sick and inadvertently punished if she tries to behave normally or present a normal image, which is likely to worsen the patient's condition. The worsening of the condition will make the problems with the social network even worse, which will ultimately still further worsen the condition of the patient. An individual can develop a self-image of a mental patient and verbalize his image to the people he encounters. That is, he may have a habit of revealing details about his psychological disorder in situations where it is not required. This habit may greatly reduce chances for employment, finding a mate, and obtaining close friendships, which may further worsen the psychological disorder. If the disorder gets worse, the patient will have even more information to reveal, which may worsen his social problems even more. Another type of vicious cycle relates to the educational process of children, teenagers, and young adults. Psychological difficulties or environmental stresses can interfere with academic performance. This can lead to failures in elementary school of basic academic skills, such as reading and writing. And of course, in high school and college, it can lead to general failure of more advanced subjects. The failures in school may result in worsening the psychological condition, which will cause even more problems in school and in the social network. This, of course, can greatly worsen most psychological conditions, which will cause even more academic failures. A failure to learn certain non-academic skills, such as social skills, can happen as a result of a psychological disorder that started early in life. The deficiency is likely to lead to social difficulties, problems in school and employment, which may worsen the psychological condition. The worsened psychological condition will cause further difficulties in school, employment, and in the social network. When an individual develops psychological problems in childhood, he may be inadvertently or intentionally taught alternative sets of coping and social skills, which may be dysfunctional. These dysfunctional skills can interfere with both school and employment, and result in general social difficulties, which can perpetuate and worsen the psychological condition. Another type of vicious cycle involves the deterioration of health habits, such as maintaining good nutrition, maintaining proper body weight, healthy sleeping patterns, using alcoholic beverages in moderation or not at all, not using illicit drugs, etc. Such health habits can deteriorate as a result of a psychological disorder. This can result in deterioration in health and a reduction in overall motivation. This will generally worsen the overall psychological condition. If the patient is still in school, this will generally interfere with academic performance. If the individual is employed, his job performance will most likely deteriorate to the point where he is fired. This will further worsen the psychological condition, which might lead directly or indirectly to further deterioration in health. There is a vicious cycle that relates to employment and psychological disorders. If the psychological disorder interferes with employment, the individual might lose his job. The loss of the job and financial resources will most likely worsen his condition. The worsening of the patient's problem may result in an inability to find new employment, which can lead to long-term financial problems. If the patient is a married man, this condition can lead to divorce, which will still further worsen the psychological difficulties. There are almost a limitless number of other types of vicious cycles that can cause psychological problems to develop into a more serious condition, but the above examples are more than adequate to explain the principle. Note: the job of crisis intervention therapy should be to prevent any vicious cycles from taking place. It should also prevent chain reactions. Of course, the six categorical components and the factors mentioned do not automatically cause a psychological disorder. The factors usually must impact the individual with adequate intensity and duration to cause psychological problems. But there are probably cases where the initial impact was very mild, resulting in very minor difficulties, which triggered a vicious cycle resulting in serious psychological problems. In general, even minor problems can become very serious if a vicious cycle of significant intensity and duration is triggered. Very often the actual cause of a psychological disorder is the result of a number of factors impacting the individual over a period of time, which usually includes one or more vicious cycles. It should be noted that in some unusual cases, some of the factors mentioned in the list, such as the factors under adverse environments, may actually stimulate motivation and personal growth, as opposed to leading to a psychological disorder. This can happen if there are certain positive factors that are strong enough to counteract the negative factors. Such positive factors might be strong philosophical beliefs, which may have a religious basis, the positive encouragement from parents, etc. However, usually strong philosophical beliefs and encouragement from parents are not strong enough to counteract a number of negative factors. Note: many mental health professionals and laymen would wonder why I did not put genetic traits on my list. The reason is I do not believe that genetic traits cause psychological disorders. It is perhaps true, in some cases, that genetic traits have some influence on whether a psychological disorder develops or not. However, the cause in the development of a psychological disorder is generally the result of one or more of the six categorical components and the factors they contain. Of course, I am not discussing any illness with a physiological origin here. I am only discussing psychological disorders. The above does not totally rule out the role of genetics. The way genetics comes into the picture is through certain types of interactions with other people. For example, if an individual is born black, a genetic trait in a poor environment, she may have to face much discrimination in her life. The discrimination can lead to an increased chance of developing a psychological disorder. The race is genetically determined, but the discrimination against black people is a sociological factor. Thus, the cause is not genetic. This type of reasoning cannot be applied to all genetic traits, but it can be applied to many. A hypothetical example of a genetic factor that might influence the development of a psychological disorder is a variation in the energy level of a person. People might be born with different levels of energy. If an individual is born with a high energy level in a healthy middle-class environment, the genetic trait might facilitate a hard-working, well-adjusted person. That is, the energy might be focused into constructive activities. However, a person born with the same genetic trait for high energy, in a poor, maladjusted family who lives in a high crime area, might have an increased chance of developing a psychological disorder. The high energy might be invested in destructive ways, such as aggressive behavior, experimentation with drugs, and illegal activities. This behavior by itself can be defined as a psychological disorder, but such behavior increases the chances of even worse psychological problems. Another example can be seen with the hypothetical genetic trait for quick learning. In an environment where the individual is surrounded by well-adjusted people, the quick learner will pick up adaptive behavior patterns very fast, which is certainly a very healthy situation. However, a quick learner in a maladaptive environment will learn maladaptive behavior patterns very quickly, which is certainly likely to result in serious psychological problems. Thus, in one type of environment, a specific genetic trait might have no effect on the development of a psychological disorder. the trait might actually facilitate mental health. However, the same genetic trait in a different type of environment might facilitate the development of a serious psychological disorder. This is one of the reasons why I excluded genetic traits from my list of causative factors. However, there are many people who strongly believe that genetic traits cause or predispose people to psychological disorders. This belief probably serves the purpose of reducing guilt and responsibility for the development of psychological problems. The genetic excuse also provides quick and simplistic answers to complicated problems, which are really caused by deficiencies in our society. End of note. The point is that it is the net effect of the number of negative factors and their intensity combined with any positive counteracting factors that will determine whether a psychological disorder develops. In general, if any of the components are present in a given situation, there is probably a strong possibility that psychological difficulties will develop. A primary factor in the development of psychological disorders is related to whether a condition is defined in a specific situation as a disorder. For example, a heavy drinker in certain economically disadvantaged environments might be considered normal by the people in his social network. However, a person who drinks just as much may be classified as an alcoholic in a typical middle-class environment. The same is true with most psychological disorders. The definition will be determined by the many different types of social networks, especially by family members and close friends. See note at the end of this paragraph. Of course, extreme cases of abnormal behavior will be almost universally classified as a serious mental disorder, but very few cases fall into this extreme category. Once a condition is classified as a psychological disorder, a vicious cycle may or may not develop, in relation to the reactions of the people in the social network. For example, some social networks might consider a patient diagnosed as having clinical depression as crazy. Thus, in such networks, the patient might be treated as a crazy person. However, there are other social networks that might simply define the problem as a temporary nervous breakdown, which might motivate friends and family to support the patient in the process of recovery. The point is that psychological disorders are no mystery, but they are quite complicated and they are not produced by genetic factors. There is no reason to hypothesize unknown genetic components to account for the development of psychological disorders. This becomes obvious when we look at the list presented above with the six categorical components. Most conditions that are called mental illness are really psychological disorders, caused by one or more of the categorical components on the list. Of course, there are exceptions to this. There are mental disorders caused by physiological factors, such as syphilis attacking the brain, and many other conditions that are neurological and or biochemical in nature. The terminology mental illness. In the ideal world, the term mental illness would not be applied to psychological disorders. The term would only be used when behavioral difficulties were caused by neurological or biochemical conditions, which was confirmed by chemical testing of body fluids, X-ray, or careful medical diagnosis. The term mental illness is deceiving. It gives the false impression that an internal physiological malfunction is causing the patient's problems. If the patient improves to the point where her behavior is normal, people and some psychiatrists and psychologists will think there is some internal physiological mechanism, which will cause a reoccurrence of the disorder. This belief will interfere with the patient's rehabilitation. However, since psychological disorders can be just as disabling as a true illness, the term mental illness might be necessary, for legal reasons as it relates to insurance and disability benefits. Are some mental and emotional problems better seen as illnesses than others? There are different views on this issue in the literature and amongst psychiatrists and psychologists. One of these views is that genetic predispositions are often involved with psychological disorders. Another view, which includes the above idea of genetic factors, considers most psychological disorders to be physiological conditions, which may be triggered into a disease state by social, psychological, or environmental factors. The physiological factors causing the condition are usually believed to be unknown factors that will eventually be discovered. My view is quite different than the above and is presented in the following paragraphs. Certain mental disorders are certainly true illnesses with a neurological cause, such as when syphilis attacks the brain, and any neurological condition that affects brain function. However, there are diagnostic labels that are put on patients that are not necessarily precise. Examples of such labels are schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, major depression, seasonal affective disorder, phobias, obsessive-compulsive disorders, generalized anxiety disorder, panic disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, dissociative identity disorder. The older terminology is multiple personality disorder, somatoform disorders, psychophysiological disorders, sociopathy. Older terminology is psychopathic personality, alcoholism and drug abuse. These labels are briefly discussed in the following paragraphs. Schizophrenia. Schizophrenia is really not a precise term. There are probably many factors that can cause the set of symptoms associated with schizophrenia, such as auditory hallucinations, disorderly verbal statement, withdrawal from others, etc. Most cases of schizophrenia are probably some type of psychological disorder and are not physiological illnesses. However, there are disorders that have true physiological abnormalities such as abnormal variations in brain structure, which have been called schizophrenia. These conditions are true illnesses, because there are detectable variations in physiological factors. Bipolar disorder. Bipolar disorder is thought to be a true disease and a relatively precise label by many psychiatrists, but there is no precise biochemical or X-ray method of diagnosing this condition. The original hypothesis was developed as a result of genetic studies on a relatively small sample of subjects. This suggests that we may be dealing with a hypothetical condition that may not be a true disease in all cases. But there probably really is a true disease, a physiological origin, that causes this problem in some cases. Patients in the original genetic studies probably had such a disease. Most likely the label bipolar disorder is applied to many psychological disorders that appear to have fluctuations in mood over a period of time. Fluctuations in mood can simply happen as a result of being over-involved in various activities to the point of exhaustion. Exhaustion can facilitate depression if other psychological factors are present. The exhaustion and depression facilitate a decrease in activity and generally additional hours of sleep. This eventually results in recovery and an accumulation of excess psychological energy, which can facilitate riskier behavior. The increase in energy, which will ultimately lead to exhaustion and the failures associated with the riskier behavior, will put the person back into depression after a period of time. Thus, there probably is a true bipolar disorder that is a disease, and there is most likely a number of psychogenic disorders that mimic the disease. That is, it is possible to get a manic state followed by depression, in a repetitive cyclic manner, as a result of psychological factors alone. The psychological version is certainly not a disease. Major depression drug companies and many psychiatrists believe that major depression is a disease of physiological origin. This might occasionally be true. However, I believe most cases of clinical depression are the result of psychological factors. Almost but certainly not all cases of depression can be traced to one or more of the following major failures: adverse life circumstances, death, boredom, negative thinking habits, attributing failures to limitations of self, unrealistic expectations of self and/or the world in general, and other psychological factors. In addition, a major factor in some types of depression probably involves certain types of poor coping skills, which are inadequate to deal with the failures and other adverse experiences of life. There are certain types of depression that are associated with repeated bouts of failure and depression. The failure might be facilitated by unrealistic expectations and may include an unwillingness to consider possible risks of failure. This makes it impossible to avoid the failure by taking corrective action. When the failure comes, so does depression. Another factor that may be related to certain types of depression is the patient is very realistic about the negative realities of her life and is very displeased with these realities, which results in depression. Seasonal affective disorder. Seasonal affective disorder is believed to be a disease also, and once again this might be true in some cases. However, it might be a psychogenic disorder in many cases. The seasonal variation in mood, which drops to a depressed state in winter and reaches a peak in happiness in summer, can be the result of psychological factors. Sunlight is associated, from childhood on, with pleasant experiences for many people. The association includes experiences at the beach, outings in the wilderness, vacation from school and work. Thus, the simple association of sunlight may have an uplifting effect on the mood of many people. The cold weather and the lack of sunlight is associated, from childhood on, with unpleasant experiences, such as the discomfort of the cold, staying indoors and going to school. However, the above associations are only part of the psychological dynamics. Winter can truly be a depressing time for many people, because the low temperatures make it more difficult to socialize. For example, outings on the beach or picnics are generally not feasible, and students have less time available because of their schoolwork. In addition, cold weather can be physically very uncomfortable for many people. Summer truly is more interesting and exciting for many individuals. There are vacations, outings on the beach and in the wilderness, which offer interesting experiences and chances to meet new people. Thus, for some people, summer is a merry and exciting time, and winter is a very boring and depressing part of the year. The individuals with seasonal affective disorder of a psychogenic origin might inadvertently let the negative and positive associations and realities of winter and summer influence their mood. Phobias are definitely not of somatogenic origin. Thus, I will not classify it as a disease or illness. Phobias are basically the result of various experiences that cause irrational fear responses to certain stimuli. The fear response involves a physiological reaction, but this does not make it a disease, because the causes of phobias are psychological. Obsessive-compulsive disorders are believed by some drug companies and psychiatrists to have a biological basis, which relate to a predisposition to develop the disorder. The relatively involved behavior, such as ritualistic cleaning of hands, excessive checking and counting of certain objects, an irrational effort to obtain perfection in situations where perfection serves no significant purpose, makes the belief highly questionable. Most likely the belief is motivated by the financial desires of drug companies, who make drugs that can reduce the motivation to carry out obsessive-compulsive behavior. This does not imply any dishonesty on the part of the drug companies, because the drugs really do reduce obsessive-compulsive behavior. However, their hypothesis is not correct. It is possible to reduce the motivation associated with just about any type of behavior with the various types of drugs that are on the market. Thus, it is quite apparent, because of the relative complex nature of the behavior associated with obsessive-compulsive disorder, that the condition is caused by psychological factors. Therefore, I would not classify this disorder as a disease. Generalized anxiety disorder is another condition that is believed to have a physiological cause by some drug companies, psychiatrists and psychologists. Again, this is probably motivated by the financial desires of the drug companies and their advertising, which influences people in the mental health professions. There are many drugs on the market that can reduce anxiety, and the companies simply want to sell their product. However, very likely there are certain anxiety disorders that are truly caused by malfunctioning physiological factors, but these conditions generally do not have anything to do with most anxiety disorders. It is true that all types of anxiety involve a significant physiological response, such as increased heart rate, increased blood pressure, etc., but this response is generally caused by psychological factors. Thus, I would not classify most anxiety disorders as a disease. Panic disorder may have a contributing physiological basis in certain cases. The following is not the generally accepted view of panic disorders. Some panic disorders may be caused by certain tranquilizer drugs, such as beta blockers. Basically, the body produces chemicals, which can be thought of as stimulants that counteract the results of the tranquilizer. These stimulants increase over the time interval that the tranquilizer is used. If the tranquilizer was regularly used over a period of time and then suddenly reduced or stopped, the natural stimulants, which were increased by the body's response to the tranquilizer, will cause increased heart rate and blood pressure, and other physiological symptoms. These symptoms can be quite severe in some cases. If the symptoms are severe enough to frighten the patient, then a true panic attack might manifest. This can be thought of as a type of chemical addiction to certain types of tranquilizer drugs, and since it has a physiological cause, I would classify it as a disease. However, most types of panic disorders are probably caused by psychological factors. Some of the dynamics that might be involved are as follows. A vicious cycle is triggered by a fear of various bodily responses, such as sudden increases in heart rate, momentary dizziness, a feeling of anxiety, etc. These bodily reactions cause fear, because the patient believes or feels that something terrible is about to happen. The fear causes an increase in the bodily responses, such as increased heart rate and anxiety. These responses cause even more fear, which of course results in even a greater heart rate, which causes still more fear, etc. Unfortunately, panic disorders may be treated with tranquilizers such as beta blockers, which may help the patient for a while, but in the long run there is a high probability that the condition will be worsened by the medication. This is probably obvious from the paragraph that began this discussion. Post-traumatic stress disorder. Post-traumatic stress disorder is a psychogenic condition and thus is not a disease. This condition obviously develops from extreme environmental stress, such as in war. Dissociative identity disorder. Dissociative identity disorder, the older term is multiple personality disorder, is a psychogenic disorder and is not a disease. The condition involves two or more distinct personalities that developed in the same individual. Somatoform disorders are psychogenic disorders and thus are not diseases. The disorder essentially involves bodily complaints that relate to psychological factors. One type of somatoform disorder is hypochondria, which involves an irrational belief of having a disease. Note: probably in some cases, involving somatoform disorders, the individual really is suffering from an undiagnosed medical problem. This probably was very true in the past, because of limitations in medical diagnostic methods. Thus, I believe that older literature on somatoform disorders may not be valid. End of note. Psychophysiological disorders. Psychophysiological disorders are physiological disorders that were facilitated in their development by psychological stresses. Examples are coronary heart disease, high blood pressure, and asthma. Obviously, psychophysiological disorders are true diseases. However, the role of psychological factors in the development of the disease is probably not a total causative factor. The psychological stress probably facilitates the development if various physiological factors are present. Sociopathy. Sociopathy is a psychogenic disorder and not a true disease. The individual afflicted is called a sociopath. An older term is psychopath. There are some individuals who might argue that there is a physiological component involved with this disorder. In certain cases this might be true, but generally the condition appears to be the result of an individual who is a victim of maladaptive learning. Some of the basic symptoms are antisocial behavior, selfishness, callousness, impulsiveness, and the individual is very irresponsible. However, the sociopath can be quite intelligent and capable of putting on a good social image. They may use this to con and manipulate people for their own satisfaction or financial gain. Alcoholism. The causative factors of alcoholism are psychological factors, including components related to culture and the family background of the individual. Thus, from this perspective, it certainly is not a disease. See note discussing genetic factors 2 paragraphs below. However, alcoholism and nutritional deficiencies that are likely to accompany excessive drinking will usually cause a true physiological disease. Alcohol by itself has many destructive effects on the body, including the brain. The destructive effects are usually worsened by the very poor eating habits of the alcoholic. Most of his calories might come from hard liquor, which has no significant quantity of vitamins and minerals. Thus, alcoholism is not a disease because it is caused by psychological factors, but excessive drinking causes one or more true physiological diseases. Drug abuse. Drug abuse is similar to alcoholism. The condition is caused by psychological factors, thus it is not a disease. However, the drug can cause one or more physiological diseases. Many drugs are physiologically addictive, which I would classify as a disease. Note: the idea has been raised by some researchers that alcoholism is caused by genetic predispositions. Similar arguments can be made for other types of drug abuse. Thus, the following 2 paragraphs can also be applied to other drugs besides alcohol. Question: are these arguments valid? Genetic factors are not particularly relevant until the individual starts to drink excessively. People with certain traits will become intoxicated with less alcohol than people without the traits. For example, a person who is small in height and body frame will get intoxicated with less alcohol than a tall person with a big frame. Other factors are related to variations in metabolic rate. An individual with a slow metabolic rate will maintain the alcohol in her system longer than an individual with a high metabolic rate. There are probably many other similar factors that can be genetic in nature. However, what many people believe about alcoholism and genetics is not related to the above. There are people who simply believe that alcoholism runs in families and it is genetic. Actually, alcoholism sometimes does run in families, because the culture and the family background are primary determining factors in the consumption of alcohol. Perhaps, it might be easier for a person to become an alcoholic if he has certain genetic traits as mentioned above, but this only comes into play if the person has a desire to become intoxicated. It will be easier for some people to make themselves intoxicated than others, as a result of certain genetic traits.